Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Inner Consciousness with me, your host, Reverend Harvey L. Bailey. Now, today we're going to do a little something different than what we normally do. You know, as always here, this is a spot for learning, for being educated. You know, we've talked about a lot of good subjects, but this time, we're going to talk to a brother who's gone through his own journey. So instead of talking about several different ways of doing things, this show is going to be all about this brother and his journey to find healing, to heal the hurt within. But we're going to find out what that hurt within was, how he was expressing it, and how he has survived that hurt within. You know, it has been said that there is no obstacle too great, no challenge too difficult that we cannot meet with faith. Gordon B. Hinckley said that, and that's what this brother has dealt with to get him to where he is. So, I'd like to introduce you all to Mr. Issa Ali. Issa, how
are
you?
Hey, what's up, brother? I'm doing good, man. Maintain and staying focused, you know, taking one day at a time.
All right. Well, good. Good to hear that, man. So tell us a little bit about who Issa Ali is.
Yes, of course, I would love to. Well, Issa Ali is a speaker, motivational speaker. I'm also a licensed religious science practitioner, which constitutes as being a healer. I'm also a hypnotist, and I'm also a writer. And I'm just your ordinary guy that has been through different schools of thoughts and transformed and changed his life, and now using my past experiences as a living testimony and possibly helping others.
Okay. Wow. That sounds good.
Thanks,
man. You know, it is good to have brothers out there doing something, man.
Yes,
you know,
sir.
To have heroes, or at least people who are doing good things in the world, because we're so inundated with the negatives.
Mm-hmm.
And we come to think that everyone we encounter has some deep, dark secret or some ulterior motive, and they're going to take advantage of us or attempt to take advantage of us. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, we forget that there are people doing good in the world.
Absolutely.
But you weren't always there, right?
No. I was not always there. And it's still a work in progress. There's no question about that. As long as you have to keep up the work, that's the thing about it. You have to keep up the work. As far as my past is concerned, I have been a man that has been guilty of being abused by his mind and projecting that abuse in my relationships, primarily with women, and then also expressing that abuse in my community as well, you know, the crime, living a criminal lifestyle, and just doing things, you know, it's a thing that goes hurt people.
Mm.
And I would have to say that was my motto.
Okay. So tell us about it. What was going on with you? I mean, let's kind of start early on with you. What was going on that got you to a life where, you know, you were out there in the streets thugging and you were treating women as,
mm-hmm.
you know, the way you were?
Yeah, man. I believe, you know, coming up, my father and my mother, they did the best that they could. They loved me, but I didn't necessarily feel that love. And as a result, I was seeking that love through external means, drugs and sex, women. I was looking for validation. I was looking for some type of value. I was looking for self-esteem. And at an early age, I would have to say around 8, and then escalating to 9, 10, 11, 12, 13,
mm-hmm.
experimenting with drugs, being a follower of the older teenagers in the neighborhood, wanting to emulate them just to get attention.
As young as eight?
Yes, yes, absolutely, as young as eight.
So now, and I know somebody listening right now is asking themselves, where were your parents at eight?
My parents were present. I spent a lot of time with my older cousins,
okay.
And they had influence on me as well because I wanted to be like them. So, you know, my desire to be like my older cousins, that also fed my, I would have to say, thank you to believing that what I was doing was the right way to get attention or feel like a man or feel grown or feel good, basically. It's all about feeling good, man, to be quite honest with you.
Okay, okay. So what were you doing? What was going on out there in the streets?
Well, you know, I started smoking weed around the age of 11 and 12. Started drinking around the same age, hanging out with the in crowd, breaking in houses, carrying guns, robbing people. Wow. I was really out there, man. And as a result of that, at the age of 17, I got incarcerated, spent at least 8 years incarcerated. And I came home, and as a result of not really being healed, you know, looking at inside myself, things started to resurface, old patterns, old behaviors that I thought was I was over with, they begin to resurface, especially around relationships.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so before we talk about relationships, I want to ask you a question, mm-hmm. man. You know, there's a lot of debate out there about institutionalizing, you know, brothers.
Mm-hmm.
It, because the intellectuals will say there's no rehabilitation. You lock them up like animals, and after a period of time, you set them free. So, you know, what's the purpose of this? All you did was take them away and allow them to be educated to become better criminals. What would you say? Is there some truth to that?
Well, yes, there is some truth to that. Like, there's truth that you could stay in the sun and get a nice tan. But there's also truth, if you stay in the sun too long, it will burn your skin.
Okay.
So there is truth to that. Malcolm X said that prison was the second best thing to college, or is the second best thing to college, if a man utilized his time wisely. Prison, I know you was in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was locked up, I had a god sister. She was in the military also. We used to write each other. I used to tell her what was going on. And she used to tell me what was going on when she was in the military. And it was very similar. You had to go by certain rules, certain things you just could not do. You couldn't walk off the base when you wanted to. You know, you couldn't go to bed when you wanted to. You couldn't eat. You couldn't have the freedom, the liberty to do exactly what you want to do when you was in the military, from what she was explaining to me through her letters. I think that I think utilizing your time wisely is the essential key to transforming your life. It really is. You have many men that have been incarcerated and their lives have been transformed. Nelson Mandela, you know, Malcolm X, Stephen Biko, you know, even Paul and the Bible. So the list can go on. But then on the other hand, you do have too many men,
mm-hmm.
that do spend their time not so wisely. And I think that the thing about prison, it doesn't give you that therapeutic medicine. You know, you can read all the books. Yeah, that's cool. You can read all the books like I did on my first bit. Read a lot of books, but something emotionally was still crippled. George Jackson said a man never leaves prison the same way he enters prison. It's going to affect you some type of way. It's going to affect you. There's no question about that. It's going to affect you. So I do think there's some validity to what you said, and I also think that, you know, there's some validity to using your time wisely, transforming your life, and coming out and making a change in society.
So basically the rehabilitation has to be within the person.
Exactly.
The institution itself just institutionalizes you.
Exactly.
It does not do anything to make you a better person or make you even, you know, forgiving.
Right, right. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I do want to move on, but before I do, I just wanted to say, you know, once you're out of basic training in the military, basic training is the only place where you're really controlled. Outside of that, it's a regular job. You can leave the base as much as you want. Now, overseas, there's a restriction. Oh, actually, even stateside, there's a restriction. Usually, you can't go further than like 200 miles away from the base, but, you know,
that's
it's a regular job. Yeah.
That's where she was at, yeah.
Well, overseas it's very different based, you know, because you're overseas and what you have to deal with, you
mm-hmm.
know, so it's a whole different thing. But,
okay,
so let's move past those years. And you were saying that when you came out, you know, mainly at this point it seemed to be about dealings with women.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, man.
Tell us about that.
I think what I think is, you know, I think since I got locked up at an early age, at the age of 17,
mm-hmm.
so I was locked up 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. Okay. I came home around 25 or 26. And I believe that, these are young years, young adult years, that when you're on the street, you learn things. You learn from your relationships, the ups and the downs. You learn to heal. And I think because I was abbreviated during them particular stages of my life, I did not evolve into handling different experiences and relationships. You know, I came home and, you know, jealousy was still present, insecurities were still present, the need for female validation was still present, the need to have a woman in my life, and most of the time, more than one woman in my life to fulfill my needs at the time. So the same way I went in at 17, was the same way I came out. I just had more knowledge. Not knowledge of self. I thought I had knowledge of self, but really I didn't have knowledge of myself.
Mm-mm. Okay. So what you really learned how to be was a player. You learned how to pay attention to women and find out how to work them.
Yeah. I would have to say, my playing skills went to a new level. It went platinum.
Okay. All right. and so now you're out, and now you're out here in the streets, you know, you playing women, you hustling them. How far did that go? Were you ever, you know, pimping them? Were it just all about you? You know, you weren't trying to make money off of them. What was going on here? What was going on in your mind, and what was going on in your world?
Well, there have been a few experiences. Yes, I have pimped women and played women. In my world, I believe that she was the sole source of my pleasure. That was the bottom line. In my mind, I felt like having money equals power, and that power allowed me to be entitled as a man to have as many women as I desired, to have sex with as many women as I desired. That was the validation that I was seeking to feel good. That was in my mind. And if she did not adhere to my emotional needs, then I would become abusive.
Okay.
I would become abusive.
All right. Now, right here, I just want to ask the question because
mm-hmm.
I know that for a lot of people, they may be wondering, where the heck is this going? You know, they're figuring at the end, you know, we get to the miraculous turnaround because you told us who you are. But I don't believe in victims, but I'm going to use that word just so that people listening can understand something.
Mm-hmm.
What you're doing, women are becoming victims. But I believe that in every situation, every crime, if you will, both parties are victims. So this, you're acting out, but there's something that was missing. There was something that didn't happen in your life. You know, somewhere along the line, you turned a corner that took you down this way when you could have turned another corner. You know, up until you start talking about, you know, carrying a gun and kicking in houses, your life and my life was not that different. You know what I mean? Now, I hung with older people. I was smoking marijuana at 12. You know, I was drinking at 12. Hey, at 14, I was doing Mad Dog 2020. At the age of 21, I stopped drinking. You know what I mean? At the age of 18, I stopped doing marijuana. So for a while there, we're going down the same road, but then I turn one way, you turn another way. What is it that had you turn and down the road that you went down?
I think that because I did not have a role model and did not have the tools to cope with stress, to cope with anxiety, to cope with my emotions, I used drugs, I used alcohol, I used women. My coping skills, I didn't have healthy coping skills. Once you know how pressure, if you take a can in the ocean and the deeper that can go, the pressure around the ocean will become so great that it would eventually crush the can. So the pressure in society, getting a job, needing money, you know, just everyday living, that was pressure. And because I didn't have healthy coping skills, I resorted back to what I knew and what was comfortable for me, because I didn't have no people in my life. My uncles, they did the same thing. My father, he did the same thing. The males in my family, they did the same thing. My male friends, they did the same thing. I really did not have anyone that was actively using positive coping skills.
Okay.
Does that make any sense?
It does. It does. And I want to just try to bring you to a point where it's clear to everybody. So basically, even though, because I'm sure a lot of people thinking, you know, you said you were 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. What kind of stress are you coping with? But at the same time, everybody that you know, and people, we have to understand, we are to a large degree a product of our environment. Yes, we can change.
Yes.
But
yes,
at a young age, you're not changing. You know, most people are in the religion that they're in because it was in their household when they were young.
Yes.
So here's a young man who at a young age, this is what he saw. This is what he knew. Every time he turned around, it was validated in every male figure that you saw. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Even you know, my mother, her boyfriend, I watched my mother's boyfriend abused her physically, verbally, and mentally, you know. And I believe that played that really traumatized me as well. And you would think that I would not act the way that he did as I got older, but I did. I did.
Because it is a traumatic thing, and, you know, we've known for years because psychiatrists and psychologists have told us, you know, a child who grows up in a house that sees abuse will either become an abuser or become abused.
Yes.
And so even in today's world, it's interesting because, you know, though the stats are changing, and I don't have the exact stats, we still think of, you know, in relationships, men being the abusers, and by and large, they still are, but the women, the number of female abusers are growing, and we're not addressing that. And
I
it's
agree.
Harder for a man to go say, I was abused by my woman. You know, who you going to tell? Even other brothers who's being abused like you, they going to be like the crowd, man, you a punk. And Si saying, yeah, me too. Maybe I tell them later, maybe not. You know, and so when you can't, most of the places that you go are for women. And so if you walk in there, you know, they give you the stink eye and the evil eye.
Yes.
And what you doing in here? You know what I mean?
Yes,
so where do the brothers go? And so I say to women who are listening, understand that your daughter just as well as your son. If you are being abused, both of them stand the chance of becoming either an abuser themselves or abused.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say it again, either an abuser themselves or abused. And so, Issa, I want to take it back to you. So this is now your mentality. You're in your mid-20s, you know, you're out there on the streets, and so you're doing some things. You're trying to deal with life the best way you know how.
Mm-hmm.
Take us from there on to, you know, the next thing that happens.
Well, you know, I was like 26, 27. My relationships with my ex-wife at the time was, it was mad drama. I had very little self-discipline. I had two women pregnant at the same time. You know, I had several flings going on. I'm talking about the ages of, what, 26, 27, 28, 29, you know, 30. And I caught another bitch. Eventually, my behavior, which included drugs and crime, led me back into prison again for a second time. I had a 2-year bit, my second bit, and I did my 2 year. My second bit was different. It was different in the way that my first bit, I didn't have any children.
Okay.
My second bit I did, and that crushed me. That made me. I haven't been back to prison since 1998.
Okay.
So, my second bit really, really crushed me because I didn't allow my children came to see me one time. I couldn't handle them leaving and me not going with them. So I just did the 2 years, the 24 months. You know, no visits. Visiting my children visit to me. I came home, you know, I did a lot of reading, a lot of working out and things of that nature. And I came home and then too much still didn't change, brother. I gotta be real. I'm first. I was still caught up because when I was locked up, I was really, you know, the dudes that I was hanging with, they took care of me.
Okay.
They did. When I came home, I had an apartment. I had a car. I didn't want for nothing. I told them I wanted to start a business. They said, hey, here's the money. Start it. I started my photography studio. I didn't want for nothing, really.
Okay.
You know, things were, you know, you couldn't tell me nothing. So I still had that mentality, the money, the women, you know, and that's just how I felt. And I started doing heists because I was greedy. And something happened. This is what made me stop breaking law. It was a crew of seven of us. And out of all seven, I was the only one that didn't get locked up for something. All the other six, the six guys, they got locked up. They was getting locked up. And I looked at that as being a sign, and I told my man, I said, dude, I'm done. I'm done, you know. And he was disappointed, I could tell, but he respected that. And I'm glad that I pulled out when I did, because him and two other guys, they did a heist, and they got 40 years, you know, apiece for it. And I was like, I'm glad I didn't do it. I was just so grateful. And I squared up, you know, getting a job, looking for a job, you know, working. But I wasn't working on myself, though. I stopped breaking law, but I was still dealing with the low self-esteem. I was still dealing with the unhealthy coping skills. I still was dealing with the pressure. It was more pressure now because I wasn't breaking law anymore.
Okay.
So I was venting in my relationships. If I'm unhappy, she gonna be unhappy. If I'm happy, she gonna be happy. So
and how was that working out for you?
What you mean today?
No. Back then, how was
back
that
then,
working out for you?
Back then, I'm gonna have to tell you, man.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that some women think that when a man treats them a certain way, that they equate that with love.
I've come across that. Okay.
Really? Yeah. Some women equate some abusive behavior as being love. So, and you know, you have other women that know that this is abusive. This ain't right. So it was up and down. You know, it was up and down. You know, so no woman wanted to be. And they, don't get me wrong, they had this stuff too. You know, there's no question. They had this stuff also. They were not no angels. However, because I was the man, it more so fell on me and my behavior, how I was acting, you know. So it wasn't working out too good. Really, it wasn't, because I was getting locked up for domestic violence. And, oh, man, it didn't work out too good. It didn't.
So when did you decide to make a change? When did you start to decide that, you know, you just can't do this anymore and you want to work on you?
Wow. I was in my, let me see, 2004, I think it was around 2009 or 2010. I was in a relationship and it was the same. I put it to you this way: I've been dating the same woman since the age of 12.
Okay.
In other words, nothing changed. It was mm-hmm. just the way that I treated that woman when I was 12 was the same way I treated her when I was 40.
Mm-hmm. And I get that, and I want everybody else to understand, you don't literally mean the same woman.
Right.
You mean
right.
her name was different.
Different. Right. The way I. Right, the way I treated her, I treated her the same. That didn't change, and I was in so much pain, and you know I was like, man, something has, you know, I started to look at it, you know, and I realized I had a problem. I realized I have a problem, and I did not want to grow old alone. I didn't want to grow old. My father was old, and he died alone. Mm. You know, I didn't want to do that. I wanted to work on myself. I wanted to change. And what made me change was I came so close. I'm gonna tell you what made me change. This is what it was. I was in so much pain. Because hurt people, I wanted to kill this sister for rejecting me. Mm. I literally was planning to take her life. And I was like, whoa, this has to stop. Something's not right.
Just because she rejected you.
Exactly. Just because she rejected me. If I can't have you, then nobody will have you. That was sick. That was the monster. And I realized that, dude, you're going to destroy yourself if you do not get a grip on your emotions. Mm. So, you know, fortunately, you know, I was plugged into a spiritual community. That helped. I had some friends, positive friends, because all my criminal friends were locked up or dead. So, you know, I went to therapy. I volunteered myself in a Gateway program, which is a program for abusive men.
And Issa, hold on, because you're about to go down the road I want you to go down there, but not yet.
Okay.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to go to a commercial break, and when we come back, then I want you to start sharing with us those things. You know,
okay.
Talking about how you recovered, what you had to do, and what that journey was like, because you're holding a lot of anger, and I don't think a lot of people can understand the anger. You know, hearing your story, not living it, a lot of people may not be able to understand, and they may be asking, why are you so angry? You know,
mm-hmm.
where is this coming from? So
mm-hmm.
when we come back, you can start to talk about the recovery. You can start to talk about the anger that you were holding. And
okay.
we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Join us here on the Family Healing Circle. where we heal your mind, body, and soul. Every Sunday, we start your week off right with the delightful Deletta Gillespie and Updraft. It is always an educational and informational show. Tune in on Mondays for Totally Whole with Pastor Bridget and Pastor Cook as they give you the word. Tune in on Tuesday with world famous DJ Davey D as he plays all of your old school favorites in R&B, hip hop, jazz, house, and rap. Join us every Thursday where there's something different. The first Thursday of the month, ladies, is for you. Total Empowerment with the owner of Simple Wellness Hair and Day Spa, Angela Hardy. On the second Thursday of the month, join relationship coaches Reverend Arlene Cahet and Reverend Harvey L. Bailey on One Love, One Connection, One Us as they answer all of your relationship questions. On the third Thursday of the month, men, it's time to man up with our own Sacred Masculine, Reverend Jamel Gilliam and the Sacred Masculine Show. On the fourth Thursday of the month, join me, Reverend Harvey L. Bailey, in the Inner Consciousness as I talk about self-help. When we have a fifth Thursday of the month, you can join Reverend Arlene Cahet with the Healing Paradigms right here on the Family Healing Circle, where we heal your mind, body, and soul every week.
All right, and so we're back with Issa Ali, the author of Healing the Abusive Mind. So, Issa, you was telling us how you were making a change, how you was stepping away from the life that you had lived and about the pain that you were in. So I want you to tell us that, but I just want to say to anyone who's out there on the line, if you have any questions, feel free to go ahead and hit 1 on your phone, and I'm sure that, you know, Brother Esau would be more than happy to answer any questions that anyone has. All right, so Esau, go ahead, man. Take us down this journey.
Yeah, as I was saying, I was in so much pain. You know, it was my actions towards women were me being pained up for my thinking, my core beliefs. And basically that's why I say that I was being abused by my mind about what I was believing about myself. And, you know, my last relationship, that particular relationship really just showed me how much pain I was in, how sick I was, and I needed to change. So the journey of changing, it was some work. Believe that, it was work. I had to recognize that something was wrong. I had to recognize that the route that I was going down was going to destroy me. And then I had to realize that I'm a valuable person. I'm a valuable child of God. And I have something to give to the world. And I chose not to go down that road. I volunteered myself in the House of Ruth. Well, it's called a Gateway Program. And it's a program for abusers. And I was the only one, I think I was probably out of 30 men, I was the only man that was not court ordered. And, wow, that was an experience within itself. It really was. Because they jumped on me verbally for about 3 months. Mm. The program was like 27 weeks. And because they felt like, you think you're better than us because you volunteered, and, you know, they just had some issues because they never seen anyone volunteer themselves because they all was court ordered. Mm. I just fell through the cracks. You know, I told them, I'm no different than any one of you in this room. I just fell through the cracks. I wasn't caught out. I knew I had a problem. And I also seeked out some therapy, and I seeked out other groups, support groups, NA, sex addictions, anger management. I started to journal. I started to, I was praying more, working on my spirit, started to forgive myself. I started to be grateful also. And, you know, really just looking at myself. And I would have to say that my spiritual community as well played a significant and a huge role in transforming my life.
Anissa, I want to hear about that, but we got a question. So I think this is a good point to take a pause on that, because I like where you're going with it. I want to hear about how the spiritual community helped out. But we've got a caller, and let's see. You're on the air. Caller, last four is 1832.
Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening. How are you?
I'm blessed and grateful. Are you able to hear me okay?
We hear you very, very well. Esau, are you able to hear her?
Yes.
Go ahead. Okay. I know who you are, but why don't you tell everyone who you are?
Yes, this is Zakiya, and I'm so grateful. And I didn't realize Brother Esau was on your show tonight, Harvey, and so I have missed the majority of the show, but I will go back and listen to the beginning. Brother Esau, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story and your journey. I appreciate you doing that. You know,
yes,
I'm always saying, I'm always saying that it's so good to hear our brothers open up and tell the truth, be vulnerable enough to share, because it helps others heal. So I just definitely want to say thank you. Thank you, Harvey, for bringing him on. You know, the question that is always on my mind when it comes to, and I don't have a lot of, you know, background of sexual addiction, but addiction and abuse. And I want to know, Brother Esau, what would you say to women who may be in relationships with a man such as yourself, or how you used to be? Thank God you're not there anymore. Praise God for that. But what would you say to a woman who finds herself in a relationship with a man who has either a sexual addiction and or both or one or the other, being abusive to her, not treating her with respect and honor? What would you say? Because the question always comes up, why do women stay? And, you
well,
know, for
I'll,
many
I'll,
of us... Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Samus.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, women have all kinds of reasons why we stay. We love you, you know, we think you're going to change, you're going to love us enough to change, or maybe something I'm going to do is going to help it. So we have all those kinds of reasons. So I'm just saying from a male point of view, from a man's point of view, who has, you know, been going through this, what would you say to
him? Well, you know, a few of my female friends that have been cheated on and abused, because to me, cheating is abuse. You know, if you cheat, and if you cheat and lie, then you steal. So that to me is a form of abuse. I think some women, like I said earlier, equate that with love. And then you have some women that feel like they can change the man. My question to a sister that may be experiencing abuse from a man would be, does it feel good to be in a relationship with this man? Does it feel good? Honestly, does it feel good more than it do, as far more than it feels not good, not so good? And for her to sit with that, are you really happy? Are you really happy with the way this man talked to you? Are you really happy with the way this man's lifestyle is? Is it really conducive to where you're going? What are your goals? What are your plans for life? Do you have children? If you have children, is this the ideal role model that you would want your son to emulate? So it would be questions for her to look inside herself, you know, for her to see if she had any type of value within herself. Because if she valued herself, then she's going to demand respect and value from her man. And if he cannot do that, then she is going to make a decision to meet a man that do value and see herself worth. But I believe she has to see that herself first. So my question would be about her. How do you see yourself? Do you feel good being in this relationship? How long have you been in this relationship? What was the relationship like with your father? What was the relationship like before this man? Have you ever been single? How long have you been single? Did you meet this guy on the rebound? So I'll ask all them questions focusing in on her. On her.
Okay, but then can I ask one more question along with that? So I heard you say that you were almost at the point of being ready to take this woman's life. Because you were at this point where, you know, if I can't have you, nobody else will. So what about the women who have fear? I mean, they're fearful of their life. Maybe they've been threatened. Maybe he said, if you leave me, I'm going to take your life, I'm going to take the life of your children. So, you know, that also has a lot to do with a lot of times women not walking away.
I do agree with you 100%. There, in situations like that, there's no easy escape plan. You know what I mean? It has to take not just her, we have to take help from others. It would have to take a plan. It would have to take her to build up her courage. For one, she has to have the courage to leave. You know, because we're talking about somebody that is fearful for her life. We're talking about somebody that's like, oh, my God, I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. If he catches me, he's going to kill me. He's going to kill the kids. That you know, is something that it's not a clear-cut answer, but it is an answer. There is help for a woman that is living in fear like that. There's no question. There is help out there. I believe there is not a one pill solve all type of remedy. I do believe that type of situation, especially when children are involved, it has to be strategically planned out. And you know, and like I said, she has to build up her self-esteem because she you know, fear is, oh my goodness, to live in fear, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's something that a person would have to actually build the courage. Enough is enough. I'm scared. I accept that I'm scared. I need help. And I do believe that help is out there. Help is out there.
All right.
Thank you,
Anissa, thank you so much.
And I know one of the places that you mentioned that you got help was from the House of Roots, and I know that they have a wonderful place for women as well. So thank you so much for sharing that. I hope that as the sisters are listening, they will get that first you value yourself and then you get the help that you need. So thank you so much. God bless you.
Thank you. And Harvey, I want to say, like you said earlier, that the men are abused too. That goes both ways. I mean, I remember a guy, I'll never forget it. The guys used to laugh at him. His woman was a black belt, Harvey, and she would whip his butt. She would whip his butt, Harvey. She was a black belt. He could not beat her. He couldn't beat her. So you know what he did?
What did he do?
He shot her 30 years.
Wow.
Yep. He was scared of her.
It does happen. It's one of those things that, you know, you don't hear about.
Exactly.
And
you know,
granted,
exactly,
it's not the majority.
Right.
You know, but even though it's not the majority, it is something that needs to be addressed. But Issa, you know, I want us to get back on track, and we are running a little short on time, so I want to speed it along a little bit. If you can, you know, start to tell us how you made that shift, how you made that turn, and then tell us about your book.
Yes, sir. It took time. It took commitment. It took accountability. It took forgiveness. I had to forgive myself. I had to forgive myself for the things I've done to people, men and women. I had to forgive myself for the things that I've done to myself. I had to be grateful for the things that I did have and not feel like I needed more. I had to be comfortable with who I am. And my spiritual community played a large part of that. God played a large part of all of it. All of it. Without God, I couldn't do nothing. So I just began to journal also. I began to journal a lot. And one night I was journaling, and I just started to read my journals. And I was like, wow, this may be something that I may got something here. So I started kicking it around. I started reading, you know, parts of my journal to some people, and it was like, wow, golly, good Lord. they was like, wow. So then I had the idea that it would be a good book that would be insightful for anyone that may be going through the abuse of their mind, or anyone that may be in an abusive relationship, or maybe in a relationship not even sure that if the relationship is abusive. Because abuse comes in a lot of ways, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know sisters that are religious sisters that are being abused in the name of Jesus. I know some Muslims that are being abused in the name of Allah. So abuse can come in a lot of ways, man, a lot of ways. But that's how I started to heal myself, and that's what made me decide to write the book, Healing the Abusive Mind. And, you know, I look at my book, I read it, and it is, I would have to say, it's a damn good book. It's very insightful. It really is. Because you don't hear too much talk about the abuser. You hear about the victim. Yeah, you hear about the victim. Or you may have a few books out there that, you know, guys talking about the way that they abuse women. But I think my book is a little is different because I go into more detail, more in insight, you know, about what was going on in my mind. What was I thinking about? You know, I wanted to kill this woman. You know, like, good Lord, that's sick.
Yeah, when that's did it, serious.
Yes, that's real serious. When did it start? You know, what was I seeking relief from? The pain that I was in. I wanted to be something. I wanted to be accepted with the in crowd, with the females, with the women. So, I decided to write the book, Healing the Abusive Mind. And my book is about, they have the domestic violence have a wheel. And the wheel has different parts of the wheel, like economical abuse, verbal abuse, emotional abuse, using children. And in my book, there's 8 slices to the wheel. So in my book, it's 8 chapters. Okay. And each chapter, I describe my actions on that chapter, like verbal abuse, intimidation, using male privilege, using male entitlement. And I talk about some real-life experiences that I have done to women, really. And, you know, part of me was like, dude, you can't put this out there. This is people ain't gonna look. You ain't gonna never get a woman. Probably you put this out there for people will never get a woman. And then you know the other part was like, good Lord, dude, you yeah, man, you know. So I'm like kind of like fellow attorney voice, like, man, you better not tell people that you put a gun up to her head and made her get in the car and told her she ain't going no fucking way. You better not put that in there. You better not put in there how you broke in that girl's house and killed her bird. You better not put that in there. You better not put that in there how you hit that woman in the mouth because she slapped you and you felt like you had justification to punch her in the face. You better not put that in there, man. People are look at you like you a bad person. But then I thought about it and I prayed about it, Harvey. And I said, you know what? I'm not that man anymore.
Right.
I'm not that man anymore. You know,
And there are others who are going through what you went through who want to get out of the pain.
Exactly.
And there are those who are being abused by them who need to be able to see it from the other side.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Because I'm going to tell you, like some of my female friends that have been going through challenges in their relationships with men, dude, for real, I can dissect and do radical surgery on their spouses, really. Because I know where he's coming from. I know where he's coming from. I remember one sister wanted me to talk to a brother. He had punched his wife in the eye, Harvey, and they've been together for 12 years. So I talked to him. So he wanted to talk to me because she told him about me. So he called me up. So he said, "Your brother, I hit my wife, and I'm not like that. I am so sorry. I did not mean to do it. I am not like that." I said, "Well, have you ever hit her before?" "Yeah, it was 10 years ago. But now it's just, I never did it. Other than that, I never see myself doing it again. I am not like that. I am not like that." I said, "Whoa, stop the bus, man." Stop the bus. Harvey, you know what I'm about to say.
I said, you know
what I'm about to say. I said, "Brother, you are like that. You are. Let's keep it real. You're abusive. You may hear that every 10 years. Okay. Every 10 years, you got to look forward to a blackout.
Right. Because you're still doing it.
You're still doing it.
Wow.
I said, "Brother, I understand why you're saying you're not like that, because it don't feel good to say I'm an abuser. It don't feel good to say I punched my wife in the eye, the woman that I love and have children by. It doesn't feel good. But, you know, I have to tell him, you got to forgive yourself, man. You got to forgive yourself and get help. You got to own it."
And that's a start.
Tell
us, man, how can we get your book? I understand that right now, you know, you're working on a project to help complete the book. So tell us about that, and let people get your information, because I'm sure there's a lot of people who want to hear what you got to say. Where are you going to be speaking at? What's going on with you? How can we get in touch with Brother Issa Ali?
Yes. I am raising funds for my book. My book is projected to come out in November, sometime in November. And, you know, I'm raising funds for editing, book cover, publishing, et cetera, et cetera. And you can go to GoFundMe.com/HealingTheAbusiveMind. Or is it GoFundMe/HealingTheAbusiveMind.com? My website is HealingTheAbusiveMind.com. If anyone would like to connect with me, you can connect with me through my website, and you can also connect with me through, I'm on Facebook as well. And also, if you desire to call me, my phone number is 410-970-1000. That's 410-970-1000. And I really believe that this book will help someone. I really do. Because like you said, Harvey, you know, I don't think we as men, black men, we don't talk about the stuff that we have done to women
or the
stuff that we're doing to women. Mm-hmm. We don't say, brother, man, you're wrong. You're wrong, man. You're wrong. We don't do that. You know?
And if we do, we're talking about it from a position of power and bravado.
Yes.
We're bragging about it, you know, because
exactly.
I said many a times how, you know, being a young brother out there, 13, 14, the older heads will be like, "Man, look, you treat a good woman like a bad woman like a good woman. They take care of you every time. You can get some you-know-what when you can't get a woman to feed you." You know, so that's what I'm saying. Up until a certain point, you know, you and I were heading down the same path.
Yes.
When you picked up the gun and start, you know, crossing over the law, that was when we split. But up until that point, I was getting high, I was drinking. You know, I know that pain that you speak about, which is why I wanted to go back to it. I want people to understand. You know, it doesn't sound like a lot, but when you in it, you in it. And people deal with them very differently. But Issa, I want to thank you for being on the show, man.
Thank you,
Harvey. You know, it was really wonderful to have you come out and, share your story, because, again, not a lot of people would be able to do it. Like you said, that ego mind was saying, "No, Don't do it. Don't do it. But you did, man. And so, you know, for that, yeah. Thank you, brother. Thank you for being
here.
Yes,
sir, Harvey. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. And so we're going to go to another commercial break. And when we come back, I'm going to go ahead and give us the universal principle for this month. And then it'll be time to let you go on your journey. And I will see you again in 2 weeks. Here come our commercial.
Simple Wellness Hair and Day Spa, located at 519 North Charles Street in the historic area of Mount Vernon, Baltimore. We are your one-stop holistic beauty and pampering center, offering hair, nails, massage, skin care, a hair loss clinic located in a private area, and other beauty enhancement services. Call to schedule an appointment today, 410-483-9355. We are open 7 days a week and offer a variety of savings specials. Come in today to try one of our signature packages, such as a one-hour massage, a spa manicure and pedicure, or 120-minute detox package. Packages start as low as $120. Call 410-483-9355 to book your appointment. Our website is dayspasw.com. We look forward to servicing you at Simple Wellness Hair and Day Spa.
All right, so this month, it is the law of miracles. Einstein said either everything's a miracle or nothing's a miracle. We heard Brother Esau's story, and I think we can agree that a miracle definitely happened in that man's life. So the law of miracles, this law is operable by any person, that means everyone can do it, who has realized that the essence of creation is light. A master is able to employ his or her divine knowledge of light phenomena to project instantly into perceptible manifestation the ubiquitous light atoms, the actual form of the projection, whatever it may be. It is determined by the master's wish, by his or her powers of will. So let me dumb that down if I can. We all have the ability to create miracles, and we do it every day. We make miracles when you're under pressure, when you're under the gun and you've got to get something done, and it just don't seem like there's enough time in the day or you don't have the resources to get it done yet. When all is said and done and the smoke clears, you manage to get it done. We do miracles when a loved one is in the hospital and we pray and pray and we call upon our friends and our family and our spiritual warriors and they get better. But then we make miracles every day when we wake up and we are above ground, not 6 feet under. We breathe. Our body does what it does naturally. There are people who can't walk. There are people who can't see, people who can't talk, people who can't hear, people who can't feel. If you are doing this, you are living a miracle, because either everything is a miracle or nothing is a miracle. And so that's been the inner consciousness for the month of October. I look forward to seeing you or talking with you again in 2 weeks on One Love, One Connection, One Us, and then in a month on the inner consciousness. But before I go, I want to speak to anyone out there who's looking for a job and need to have their resume touched up. Tia Martin, certified professional resume writer. She is a career counselor offering interactive and innovative integrity-based career workshops. They will be held down in Glen Burnie. So if you're in the Baltimore, Anne Arundel County area, run down there and check her out. To get more information on it, you can contact her at TaurusMoonResume@gmail.com. That's TaurusMoonResume@gmail.com. Or you can catch her on her meetup, which would be the same thing, TaurusMoonResume. All right, so it is time for me to say goodbye, and as always, I just want to leave you with these parting words. What you become is up to you. Now, I'm not trying to tell you what to do, But if it's the game of life you want to win, you must make time to go within. Good night, family.